Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending part of your day with me. We begin where Harlem meets Lincoln Center meets Wynton Marsalis, who is our first guest this hour. The famed Abyssinian Baptist Church is located at 132 West 138th Street between Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Boulevard and Lenox Avenue in Harlem. When it celebrated its 200th anniversary, its director, Reverend Calvin Butts, knew that something special was needed to commemorate the occasion. He wanted something that would embody the congregation and celebrate its mission. And to accomplish that, he turned to Wynton Marsalis to create a work called the Abyssinian Mass. I'll let the Reverend explain.
Abyssinian 200, we had to celebrate our bicentennial. There are not many African-American churches in this nation that are 200 years old, and certainly not many that are 200 years old that has the prominence of Abyssinian. So in thinking about how to celebrate 200 years, what would have been better than to ask a genius, a musical genius, to compose a piece of work for us? Well, the musical genius that I know the best is Wynton Marsalis. And he composed this piece, man, but it's more than just Abyssinian. It's a gospel celebration, good news. I'm talking about, you know, God's house. How it's a house of prayer, and how prayer unites, how everybody has a place, whether you're black or white, whether you're Muslim or Christian or Jewish. It's a cosmopolitan approach to faith, and it seeks, as the music does, jazz is a universal ambassador, seeks as the music does to draw us all together.
And yes, that is Wynton Marsalis you hear playing there. His resume is the stuff of legend, a multiple Grammy winner, a Pulitzer Prize winning composer, an educator, an artistic director of jazz at Lincoln Center. And that is where the Abyssinian Mass will be presented in collaboration with Jazz at Lincoln Center as part of the 10th anniversary of Lincoln Center's White Light Festival that is going to run from November 21st through November 23rd. Wynton, welcome to the studio.
All right. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So what were the initial conversations like back when you were first talking to Reverend Butts and to everyone involved with creating this mass, before you even thought about a note of music?
Well, we were talking about the substance of the Afro-American religious experience. We talked about the spirituals and the combination of the New and the Old Testament coming together and the embodiment of things and African traditions and how the different call and responses would work. And then we went through the mass. I came and sat down with him, and I went through all the sections of the mass, and I asked him to describe what each one was. I had already written a piece called In This House on This Morning that used essentially the same form. So I kept that form, and I went through each thing, and then I studied and assigned a different technique that can be found in gospel music. I assigned a different technique to each section. So I don't know, 20-something sections, 23 sections. And so I tried to use it also to be a compendium of styles that we've used since the spiritual.
So what are those techniques, for example?
One example is a church rumble with a chant on top of it that goes across it. Another one is a congregational call and response where mm-hmm. a person speaks and people play in response. Another thing would be a kind of vamp groove like John Coltrane would play with a modal thing that combines Anglo-Celtic religious music and songs like Greensleeves mm-hmm. with Afro-American spirituals. Another would be a habanera kind of Geechee. Boom, 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 boom. You got a right to the tree of life. So I would use all the different. So I could go on. Another is a chorale style. That's only the females sing it in a style of Johann Bach. With some blues notes in it and some of our traditions. So there may be 20 of these different techniques that I use through the piece.
I know it's work, but that sounds like fun.
It's a lot of fun because a lot of the forms you know and the styles you grew up with,
right.
you heard them, you didn't realize they were necessarily things that are a way to express worship or praise. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. If you like researching and studying, I read a lot. A lot of the forms. I grew up in New Orleans, so I was familiar with the forms in practice. I just didn't know what they were. And I learned a lot about the spiritual tradition coming out of slavery, mm-hmm. because I was less familiar with that than I was with the form of a typical Baptist service, or even of things in the traditional mass, the Mass of Bach. As a trumpet player, I played things like the Christmas Oratorio, the Mass in B minor, these types of pieces that are stalwarts of the European tradition. And to bring all the traditions together, and that's what I expressed to the Reverend that I wanted the prayer to be about.
What was something about the spiritual tradition that you didn't know that really still stays with you?
I think the main thing I learned in this was in the Afro-American spiritual tradition, how symbols are used. Different symbols mm-hmm. mean different things. So, in that tradition, Jesus and Moses, and they're all one thing. Mm-hmm. So for me, the question is to not be like a history lesson. I like to study these things, but because my upbringing was so diverse, I have to make it be real to me, like something I know or experienced. And kind of old people in my family who understood that, had that same understanding, mm-hmm. the feeling of my great aunt who, she would always hum, you know, whenever she was having troubles or problems.
What was her name?
Her name was Marguerite.
Marguerite, great aunt Marguerite.
She was very quiet, so she didn't talk a lot. And she also was a great cook. She grew up on a plantation, even though she was not in slavery. Of course, mm-hmm. she was too young. But that system still, of course, exists now in some ways. But when she would just rock me. I lived with them when I was 6 years old, and I could just... Mm-hmm. So in the beginning of the Mass, I start with that. Mm-hmm. That's why she would be. And the person says, I didn't hear nobody praying. So that's like the old folks would comment on something, you know. I think we're going to have a Mass because I didn't hear nobody praying. I didn't hear nobody calling on the Lord. Then we're going to call on the Lord.
Isn't that amazing that something from when you were 6 years old mm-hmm. is so much a part of you and who you are? That even at this point in your career, it comes to you?
Yeah, because when she was humming something from before she was six. So music exists on a stream of memory that stretches across time and epochs. The question of music is always, can you be still enough and meditate deeply enough to find that stream and hold on to it? When you get into that stream, it's all kind of melodies and things you don't know that you remember in your genes. Your great-great-great-grandparents understood that. And when you get to American tradition, which is hybrid, like I have German in my family, different types of African. If you can embrace all aspects of your genealogy, you can touch on everything in the human. We all coming from Africa. Mm-hmm. The DNA is telling us that. So even in this, I start with the trumpets playing a Muslim call to worship. The call to worship comes from the Muslim tradition. I even got a lot of tapes and listened to different modes and the way they played, and I used the concept of the trumpet being the herald, and then we play that, and the call of worship falls in. So I try to bring all the traditions together. As the Reverend said in the prayer that he picked for the scripture reading is Isaiah 56:7, which is everybody is welcome, you know.
My guest is Wynton Marsalis. We're talking about the Abyssinian Mass, which will be presented in collaboration with Jazz at Lincoln Center, November 21st through the 23rd as part of the White Lights Festival. So we just talked about all the different elements. What did you know the piece had to have or had to be successful?
I knew it had to have the range of feelings that the service has in it. I can remember the service from growing up because you're always wondering when it's going to be over. And you know when you want something to be over, you even when you're a kid, you notice the form. Okay, when we get to this, that means we only have this much further to go. Or when we get to this, it's only this much to go. So you start to, you know, when they start to give the offertory and the offering, when you, okay, this is almost over now.
Oh,
so
funny.
I wanted to not lose that feeling of expectation. I knew it had to have heft and weight. I mean, it couldn't be superficial. And because I had written another piece that used almost the exact same form, maybe, I don't know how many years earlier. That was 1992 or something. So maybe 15 or 16 years earlier. I was very well acquainted with the form because I grew up with the form of a Mass. I wanted to give you that feel. And then when you start to march down that aisle at the end, the offertory, you say, okay, we're getting ready to stop. Then the doxology, you're getting a little happy. Then the recessional, we are getting out of here. We're going to go play. We're going to eat. We're going to do whatever we're going to do. And then you got the benediction. Oh, not yet. And then, okay, that's it. So I was definitely trying to deal with it on that level.
That is so funny. It's really interesting when you, I've watched a couple videos and you have this huge orchestra band. I'm not sure what the right
orchestra,
huge orchestra, and then 70 member gospel choir. How did you go about blending the two?
Well, we come from the same tradition, so we didn't have to do that much. You know, we just for us, it's a matter of we have to make sure we have enough voices to be heard of us playing. We have a lot of our band members grew up in the church. Matter of fact, one, Chris Crenshaw, at the end, he says the prayer. And when it goes to when he gets to the benediction at the end, when he starts to talk and sing it, oh Lord, through you all things, all the choir will start saying, where's that deacon? Before you can hear him in the back whispering, come on deacon. They call him the deacon. Come on deacon. And when he starts to sing and do his thing, oh, they love him. They start co-signing. And you know, Vincent grew up in the church, and a lot of the music for this performance, we have the great Hurl and Riley, who he and I played together in the Fairview Baptist Church band when I was 8 and he was 13. He was a trumpet player then.
Okay.
But he's one of the world's greatest drummers, and he grew up absolutely in church. I mean, he is himself just an embodiment of all that's in this. So we're excited about having him play with us.
I want folks to listen to an excerpt from Glory to God, a traditional part of the Mass that takes on a little bit of a new life here. Let's take a listen. Tell my listeners what they're hearing.
Well, first, I went into that 12-8 feel. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So that allows me to play Celtic music, like jigs and Irish music. It allows me to play modal music. And I'm using kind of harmonic progression that Bach used, but I'm also dealing with a kind of Phrygian chord. Then I use the church six, but that allows me to go dum. Then I vary the vamp over and over again. So one vamp go dum. Then the trombones. I mean, it's a confluence of styles that are all actually saying the same thing with a groove in it. And then the harmony becomes complex. And I use the trumpets as the herald instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And also our swing pattern is in 16. To get African 6-8. So I start to mix all these rhythms together. I put the African 6-8, the Celtic 6, the Afro-American 12 shuffle. All that, because I'm saying glory to God. So I'm going from everywhere. And in this one, they're going to say the highest mountain, the deepest seas, you know, just covering everything. So I got the piccolos playing and the flutes and the trumpets and the men singing all the way down there. And I got the women singing up. You know, we just, everything, we stomping and we clapping and we getting everything going at one time.
It's so interesting because I know one of the mottos of jazz at Lincoln Center is everybody has a place.
Everybody has a place in the house of God. That's it. That's the motto of jazz.
And this really fits into that. This really embodies it.
That's what our orchestra is about. You know, it's what we're about. So all we got to do is be ourselves, and we embody it because that's what we are. We have been doing that for quite some time.
I understand there's some free concerts, now they're not talkbacks, but they're pre-concert discussions about the music. Why did you want that to be part of?
I think it's always important to continue to talk about music and discuss it and because things that are serious and you take a lot of time working on it. It takes time to listen and to understand it, and it's serious discussion is important about things that are serious. These traditions, we have to keep them going, and I find people are interested in knowing about the things and what, you know, what goes into the music and what it is. And I always like to give kind of listening list and check this out and see what this is. And the closer you get to us, the better we are. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want you away. Like the Wizard of Oz didn't want you. the wizard wanted you to be over here so he could continue to create subterfuge. But for us, it's the opposite. We want you to come in closer. You know, come to rehearsals. Come see. I don't know much mystery to it. I don't mind talking about how the music is written and what it is, because, you know, it takes time and it's serious.
How have people told you that has changed the way they've heard the music?
You know, mainly... For us in the orchestra, because we all write music, we all illuminate things for each other all the time.
Oh, that's interesting.
And our choir also, because I have to tell them I want the modern consciousness, but I want the sound of the old. I don't want like all that woo, all that kind of fake melismas. I hate all of that kind of fake soul, kind of
faux soul.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. I think, you know, let me with some Mahalia Jackson, but with the consciousness of the new. So it's like we have a struggle kind of going in two directions at once. It's kind of how yoga works. You're going in two directions at one time. In the West, we're taught polarity, man versus nature. You know, you're defeating something, or you're going in, and that's not the fact of life. It's just one big cycle. Mm-hmm. So you, at a certain point in the cycle, and in that cycle, everything is existing in that one time. You are your age, and somebody's just being born. And you're dying, somebody's being born. You're born, somebody's dying. It's not... So the kind of, it's hard to teach us out of polarity, because we believe in that, right, wrong, black, white, Republican, Democrat, and you get faked into the fake binary narrative. But with our music through the blues, we're always playing major and minor, mm-hmm. in six and in four, playing, improvising and playing a written part, playing with a great deal of refinement and sophistication and very animalistic and primal. So for me with the choir and everybody, get them to be primal enough and then refined.
My guest is Wynton Marsalis. We're talking about the Abyssinian Mass, which will be at Lincoln Center as part of the White Lights Festival from November 21st to the 23rd. We'll have a little more with Wynton after a quick break. This is All of It. Yeah. This is All of It on WNYC. My guest is Wynton Marsalis. The Abyssinian Mass will be presented in collaboration with Jazz at Lincoln Center as part of the 10th anniversary of Lincoln Center's White Light Festival. That's happening from November 21st. Through 23rd. And right before the break, we were talking about educating people about music and jazz and getting them invested and having it have meaning in their lives. And I know you're really focusing on arts and cultural education in schools and among our children.
Right.
And it's, you know, the arts have been decimated in the school systems. Give me your hard pitch for why we need to fund the arts.
Well, look at what's going on out here. You get lost out here. You start thinking pornography and all this stuff is cultural. And then ignorance starts to rear up, down becomes up. So let's just look around. And I think that it's a blessing to be able to participate in the lives of people's kids and to give them more. And we have to aspire for more, higher levels of maturity, not just use our children as a market to market some type of, you know, insipid kind of third-rate stuff that a lot of energy is put in to exploit the lowest parts of their... And our aspiration. Mm-hmm. And if I look at just something like the Abyssinian Mass, no doubt it would not be anywhere near as successful as a piece if it were not for our conductor, Damien Sneed. I met Damien when he was in high school. He came down home with his parents.
Wow.
To make a decision on which college to go to. So our relationship is long, and the respect. At one point, I was having trouble getting the first choir to learn. The music was very difficult. Every time I played something, he said, we can do it. Then we went to play it. They were like, it's much harder. Damien went down. He was not being paid or nothing, and he was singing every part. He made a tape for the choir singing soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. Yeah. He sang every part of the entire Mass. And he came in, and he's such a fantastic conductor, and we love him. Like, he's like, it's familiar. It all comes out of the educational environment. Now he's teaching, writing music, doing so many fantastic things. And in our orchestra, we also have members who were part of our education. Carlos Enriquez, our bassist, fantastic genius from the Bronx. He was in the first essentially Ellington High School Jazz Band Festival and competition we had at Jazz at Lincoln Center. And in that way, we have a cycle. You know, it's important to... for us to try to always elevate our cultural understanding so we can come to grips with who we are. And if not, we just are going to be fodder for marketing. It would just become a big market. Because kids today have so much marketed to them, and they're being...
sold to constantly.
sold to constant, and you don't have you if you don't have developed taste, what do you know? You know what you like. It's like I'll eat candy if you give it to me. I'll take drugs if you give it to me. I'm 12, 13. If that's available for me, okay. Nobody really tell me over and over again, hey, concentrate on this or look at this. So you know, we can lose grip on reality if we're not careful.
Let me give Damien a shout out. WQXR is presenting members of the Abyssinian Mass Choir and Damien Sneed here in the green space at WNYC on November 18th at 7 p.m.
Yes,
just wanted
indeed.
To give
yeah, get them
Corral
Le Chateau. I love them. We really love them. I mean, they're fantastic.
I also want to talk about, you have a Big Band Holidays album coming out, and there's this one track on it with Aretha Franklin. And it's so funny in the beginning because she says, Wynton, I'm going to change this up a bit.
Well, you know, I mean, I love her. She and I used to talk for long, mm-hmm. a lot. And she told me one time, she said, you know, I talked to you about Dot Green and all these people because you're the only one who knows who they are. So, you know, she said Dot Love. You know, I talk about Dot Love and all these people because you, Dorothy Donegan, and you know we would talk about all kinds of stuff. So, when she agreed to do it, she'd also write me the most fantastic emails. And I just loved it. She was so soulful and it was extremely knowledgeable. So we went through all this thing about the program and what she would play. And then when she walked out on the stage, we had written a new arrangement and everything. She said, "What you hear on the record is what she said." Well, Wynton, I'm going to do something else, not what we discussed. And, you know, coming from my I grew up in the 1960s. My mom and them loved Aretha Franklin with such intensity. Mm-hmm. And being Southern and from that time, you know, I just, every time I saw her or was in her presence, I just couldn't help but be just moved by it just because of the type of solace that she gave mm-hmm. the women of that generation, what she represented was so deep, and it is. And she could play the piano too. I mean, she was like a virtuoso of playing, and unbelievably sophisticated harmonic choices. And just like a jazz musician, she talk about Coltrane and Miles and all of them, just like you was talking to Dizzy or somebody. So I was just so glad, and her family was so great to work with, and they were like, yeah, put this out, you know, no problem. She loved you, she loved what y'all were doing, and she talk about all the kind of crazy conversations y'all would have.
I love when she just bring her purse. Because your auntie does not let go of your purse.
You know, she had that kind of that deep down home, and she was surrounded by down home. That's mm-hmm. what she loved. You know, she loved down home, and she was that kind of down home aristocrat that you used to have. Still, some people are like that. I mean, but she was just so deep in her understanding and consciousness of stuff. Like her observations she would make would be very pointed. Mm-hmm. And clear. If you talk about what separated different styles, whew, she would be on point. You would be on point, absolutely.
Not that you weren't busy enough. You also curated the soundtrack for Motherless Brooklyn?
Yeah, just some of the songs.
Yeah, so sure. How did that come about?
I talked to Edward. I've known him for a long time. Yeah. Ed Norton, you know, and he said, this is a jazz club I call the great Phil Shapp, the seer of the American vernacular. Shapp said this is what they would be doing at this time in the mm-hmm. club. I play this. So we played a few songs like Clifford Brown, Miles, Mingus, you know, all things that's in the jazz. Can I get some of my young Juilliard students to the fantastic Isaiah Thompson on the piano? Whew, I love them too. I can't forget about, I got 40 of the greatest just young musicians that they're playing is, oof. And they're playing on some of them are playing on that soundtrack. The great Joe Farnsworth is on the drums, my brother mm-hmm. from another mother. It's just fun.
You get fired up talking about it.
Yeah, I love the music, and it's yeah. been a blessing for me to play with so many great musicians and to work with great people at Jazz Lincoln Center who are not mm-hmm. musicians, but fantastic staff. Even our crew in the hall, I was telling somebody today how much I love our crew, our carpenter and our sound mm-hmm. person and our lighting Zach, you know, and just that I get a chance to work for so many years with all these fantastic people. It's been a blessing in my life. Even the engineer, Todd Whitelock, who works on these, he sent me a picture of us in the early 90s working on a record. And now we're this age, and he's at the height of his powers, and Mark Wilder's our mix engineer. We knew each other 30 mm-hmm. years ago. And now we have the blessing of working on this music, and the type of seriousness that we bring is a lifelong dedication. So, yeah, I do. I even Blue Engine Records, Gabrielle Armand works on. She worked with me at Sony when we put out 10 or 11 records in 1999. And now we're putting out 100 records in 5 years. So to work with them every day and to work with that team of people is a blessing, and it makes me strive to be more grateful. And to work with my music, I can't even describe the orchestra musicians and the level of sophistication mm-hmm. and dedication, and it's been years of it. So, yeah, it's a blessing.
The Abyssinian Mass will be at Lincoln Center November 21st through November 23rd. Wynton Marsalis, thanks for coming to the studio.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Hey, everybody. It's November, and here's something for your calendar. On November 22nd, Jacqueline Woodson, author of the New York Times bestseller Red at the Bone, will be joining us in the Green Space for a live book club event, and we want to see you there. Tickets are on sale now. Head to wnyc.org/thegreenspace to grab them. Come join us and maybe ask Jacqueline a question yourself. Plus, there is going to be a special live performance from the woman you are hearing now, hip-hop violinist Azima, and you're really not going to want to miss that. If you bring your whole book club, you can get a reserved table and a free bottle of wine. We'd love to see your book club crew there. Or maybe you haven't read the book yet, but you want to check it out. Everybody is welcome. Head to wnyc.org/thegreenspace to buy tickets to see Jacqueline Woodson on November 22nd. And you can follow us at Instagram at @allofitwnyc for book club announcements and discussion threads. We want you to get lit with all of it. See you there.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.